are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide.
Wow, I know what you're saying straight away.
The upsay.
Great first choice.
Yeah.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance and research-based publications.
This is Holly, editor at Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. 2018 is the centenary of women winning the right to vote in the UK. To mark this anniversary, over the next year, I will be interviewing 100 women working in the field of education or in the public eye in order to catalogue their lives, celebrate their successes, discuss the challenges they face, and discuss what they would like to pass on to the next generation. In this episode, I got the chance to talk to two teachers at the same time, Daisy and Becky, who are both PE teachers, both ex-professional sports people, and both also performing a middle leadership role alongside their teaching. It was great to hear them bounce off each other on topics such as juggling workload, challenging stereotypes in sports traditionally male-dominated, and they also told me why they are so good at behaviour management and what their secrets are. Okay, so today I am at Piggott School and I'm here with Becky Keneally and Daisy Gardner. Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah. Having a good day?
Yep, we're nearly there, period four, one more to go.
So can you tell me a little bit about what you do and where you do it?
Hi, I'm Daisy Gardner and I'm head of year seven and I am a PE teacher.
How about you, Becky?
Hi, I'm Becky Keneally. I'm head of year nine. I also share the role as head of Key Stage 3. I'm also a PE teacher and I've been at Piggott 11 years.
How many years have you been here, Daisy?
I've been here, I think this is my sixth year.
Okay. So what girls' sports teams do you have in the school?
We have a variety ranging from, so in winter we have netball, football, we've just started rugby. We also have gym and dance, cross country, and then in summer we have tennis, we have cricket, we have rounders, we have athletics.
Yeah, and I think that's developed since I've been at the Piggott, and we've increased the sports that we have to offer. We're very fortunate, we have a fitness suite as well, so the girls can go use the fitness suite too.
Yeah, and we have girls only sessions with that as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. In general, do you notice a difference between girls' and boys' engagement with sport?
I find that we have a core group of girls that do every sport. So sometimes we have to almost argue for them. But we get really good numbers, but it is a core group that near enough to every sport we have to offer.
Yeah. I'd say that girls are happy to just get on with it. They don't need the competition in lesson time, and then the girls in after school, that's when they thrive for the competition. But lessons, they very much will just get on with whatever we tell them to get on with.
And what are the most popular sports for girls
in our school? Cricket and football.
And that's because we teach it. No.
Sure it is.
And would you, what else? Cricket, football, rounders.
Rounders. We get loads of numbers to rounders, and the girls really enjoy that.
So that's interesting. Cricket and football, which I guess traditionally are seen as boys, maybe, you know, more male dominated sports. Why do you think they're so popular here?
I think it's because they haven't played much of it. I also think it's our passion that comes through it. Football's been running for a very long time, but when I came and did cricket, it wasn't really on the curriculum. Becky ran a really good cricket club, but since it was brought onto the curriculum, it's something new for the girls to try. You adapt it slightly in the first place, get their engagement, and then get them playing the game properly. But I think it definitely is our passion that comes through, but also because it's something new for them.
Yeah,
I actually think with those two sports as well, we introduced them to the Piggott. When I started here, the girls were doing tag rugby instead of football, and they would stop that at year nine. Then they wouldn't really do any games bar netball. So I came and I was a qualified football coach. So I decided that I wanted to run a football club. And we went from there and we've put it in lessons as well. And then, like Daisy was saying, she's introduced the cricket. So it's been really great. And what helps is we've got really good facilities, especially for the football. The girls really thrive now because we do it on our 3G, which means if it's wet, they don't get muddy. So they can still go do their lesson or do the club, and we can do it on the 3G.
And so what sports do the two of you play outside school?
So I play cricket and hockey. Cricket was always my main sport. I played it for 15 years, went to quite a high level, but have gone back to play socially hockey because I think it's good for the kids to understand that we're still doing sport outside of school. And I think it's good to promote lifelong sports. So I tried to talk to the kids about my sport outside of school because I think it gets them engaged a bit more. When if you don't have a passion for sports, you're not really doing it, you can't sell them your lesson.
Yeah, and I think with football, I played football outside of school to quite a high level. Then I hurt my knee, so I went into football coaching. But then I missed playing a team sport, so I've moved across to netball. And I've just started doing netball umpiring as well. And it has just improved in lessons. And like Daisy was saying, I think the teachers are role models for those sports because we can say, well, when we've done this, and actually when we demonstrate a skill, we can do it really well so the girls can aspire to be like us.
So you both were very modest there. You both referred to playing sports to high level, but I want you to brag a little bit more. Give us details.
So when I was younger, I played for Reading. I went through all the academy setup. It wasn't as good as it is now. But I went from Reading, I went to Fulham, but the travel was a little bit too much, so I went back to Reading. And then I moved across to Barnet because at that time, when I was playing ladies, Barnet was a higher level. So we were in the same league and playing against Arsenal, etc., the teams that you'd think were more higher profile. And I played there until I injured myself and I decided to go down coaching route, where I then got my level 3, FA level 3 award, which I'm still really proud of. And not many females in particular have that qualification.
Wow, that's brilliant.
Very high level.
What about you, Dave?
So with my cricket, I played for Berkshire Women for 15 years. I then got accepted onto a scholarship at Lords, which I trained with them for a year on the YCC, which is the Young Cricketers Association, which they train you up for further life in cricket. I then got selected for the England Women's Academy. I played with them for a bit, trained with them for a year, represented them, but unfortunately didn't get any to the first team, but I went on a few training camps with them. And then after that, carried on playing with Berkshire and then was very lucky enough to play in the first ever Women's Super League for the Southern Vipers. So that was an amazing experience, travelling around the country and playing in all the big stadiums and a lot of media around it, which is fantastic. But then I retired last year because the commitment at school was too much to uphold with cricket.
What would you both say are the challenges that you faced kind of playing a sport at a reasonably high level, as you know, a sport that's traditionally kind of a male sport?
I think I quite liked it when I was younger because I liked playing against the boys for the competition, and I quite liked being different. So they would say, oh, this is Becky, oh, she plays football, and it was quite a big thing at the time. Interestingly, me and my sister have played football and my brother hasn't. So actually in my family, we went round down the football route and my brother didn't. So my dad was quite proud and he would take us to games as well. But I quite liked it because I liked the competition. I liked the contact in the sport. And actually, when I was at Barnet, we played a few games against their academy boys. And I didn't really face any challenges or stereotypes there. It was just a really good, hard game. And I've been quite fortunate. People have just really supported me playing football.
I think when I first started out, there were a lot of barriers in sport because women's football at that time had started to take off a lot more than women's cricket. When I first started, there were no girls' teams that I was aware of, so I played with the boys. They were really patronising, talked you down, but luckily I had my brother there, so he, you know, kind of stopped that. And then as I grew on and cricket grew on, that started to stop. And as the women became more successful, it started to get out there. I still had the barriers when I went and played men's cricket because I did that to further my game because it is a faster, stronger game. And when I would turn up, they'd feel like they'd have to slow their bowling or they would take the mick. But then that kind of made me want to play harder, and I found then the banter quite funny. But I don't think at the moment, I think the barriers and stereotypes are definitely dissolving as women are coming more.
I still think popular. Though that you have to prove yourself.
Yes.
Even now in teaching, if we were to pick up a boys' class, we would have to demonstrate something to begin with for them to be like, oh, miss can play, miss can bolt, miss can catch, throw. And we still have to do that to even get the respect of the boys as young as you're seven.
Wow.
But then as soon as you do that, you've got a meeting out of the palm of your hand.
Yeah. And I think the boys, it helps in our teaching. Mm. I think we can get on with the boys a bit better because we are good in a more male-dominated sport. So I know that we have no problems with naughty boys as such because they respect us, whereas other teachers, female teachers in particular, may struggle.
Wow. And how do you think your experiences playing these sports has influenced kind of now how you work with girls and how you try and engage girls into these sports in your teaching?
We are very quick to put any sort of stereotypical language out.
Mm.
We don't call it female press-ups, we call it half press-ups. There is no throwing like a girl or anything like that. We really stamp that out, especially with the boys. We do encourage girls to play with the boys as well. So I set up cricket fixtures where the girls are playing against the boys. I know that boys' football have played with girls as well. And we're very lucky that the males here respect us as well. So I think they're very good at not encouraging any stereotypical language either.
Yeah, and I think we know a lot of the opportunities that are available to girls now. Mm. So whereas they might say, oh, there's no club for this, we know now club links that we can start telling them about to get them involved at a young age, so they don't think straight away that there's nothing available to them.
Mm. Okay, I want to move on a little bit. You both mentioned that as well as your teaching job, you have leadership responsibilities. How do you find that? Managing those two roles. Is it easy?
It's manageable, but it's not always easy. I think being a PE teacher helps, especially because in our year groups, we will know every single one of the girls in particular because we teach all of them through all their lessons. So straight away, we have that advantage. I think with the sports that we play, the boys respond well to us. And being a PE teacher, we have very good behaviour management. And I'd say that's one of both of our strengths. We don't struggle with behaviour in lessons. It is difficult, though. The role, our pastoral roles are developing and more has been put on us. And we're having to manage that. And it can be really difficult at times, but luckily we help each other out.
Yeah, we really work together, which is really handy because there's three of us in the office that are heads of year. The biggest problem for us as PE teachers, again, it comes under stereotype that we have nothing to do after school. Well, we may be at a fixture till 6 o'clock. We teach 4 theory classes each, and then we've got all the admin on top of that. So we work all through the night, really, yeah, don't we?
Really,
and then
do.
we're up in the morning. Then we're out on the field and we come back to 10 emails where a classroom teacher might have been able to switch on to their laptop. We can't. But then plus side, we get to know the kids outside of school. We get to see them with our coach's hat on. And that's what we both really promote, that after school, we're not their teacher, we're a coach. So you have a bit more laid back approach and the kids love that.
Mm.
So then they know the line that they can. I think we have very relaxed relationships until they get to that point. Then they know that we can be really strict.
A lot, and what you've said before, that. Firm but fair.
Yeah.
And we show them respect as long as we get it back. As soon as they break that, we obviously would step up. But firm but fair is an approach we use.
Mm.
What would you say is the biggest challenge in your job?
Time management for me. Throughout the day, if you get a free, you may walk somewhere, you're bombarded by 10 people to help them. We find that people are unsure how to delegate or what route to go to. So, for example, we found this year that a lot of classroom teachers have jumped straight to head of year. And actually, it should have been they deal with it first, or they go to their department head, then the head of year get involved. But because we are proactive, we will deal with it. But then that actually causes us more problems in the future to deal with time management.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, with us being proactive. If we see something happen, we deal with it there and then. If I have an email, I like to reply straight away, if not within that hour, so the teacher feels supported. Well, actually, that's kind of a fault of my own, because now teachers expect that from me. They will email and expect a response straight away. And sometimes it's difficult, and it's the same with parents. They might email in, and if you haven't had the chance to reply to them or return a call, it can escalate. And that is a shame. It's something that actually has got us quite down at times. But we do work together to try and help each other's workload.
What would be your biggest kind of workload management tip for teachers?
I think something that Becky's taught me is not to look at emails just before you go to bed.
Yes.
Because you don't sleep, it's on your mind, you don't think about it. And I was really bad at that because I wanted, well, Becky was a role model to me and I wanted to be as good as her. So, and then I would look at my emails and it would stress me out. I wouldn't sleep. The biggest thing that I really like this year is the way that we work together. And if we, a problem shared is a problem halved. Okay, I can go to Becky and say, wouldn't necessarily talk about it and just say, oh, this happened today. And without knowing it, she's given me a tip how to deal with it. And I would then go off and deal with it and think, oh yeah, that is a really good way. I'll deal with that. So that has been the best thing to share. Not necessarily always ask, but just say, oh, this has happened, or, you know, just talk about it. Talk about your problems, because then you've relieved the stress, but also you may have got some help at the same time.
And something I think Daisy touched on earlier was being able to delegate. Mm. That's something me and Daisy need to do more.
Yeah.
But I think that would be a really good tip. You have support around you. We have a pastoral assistant. We have an assistant head of year. There's classroom teachers, our tutor team. We do need to delegate more, whereas we want to get it done and get it done effectively and ensure it's completed to the standard we would expect. But we both need to delegate more.
And then when we do it, don't we realise that, oh, that was a lot easier.
Yes, definitely.
But because we want everything to be 100%,
yeah,
then that's a problem, yeah.
I also want to ask you for your top behaviour management tip, because you both said that's something you feel like is a strength. What's your secret?
Well, I think on the odd occasion, I don't like to shout at children. I like to talk to them. And if someone is having a bad day, anything like that, I will pull them to one side and I will talk to them and talk them through the issue, explain why you have done this, rather than being really reactive and shouting or getting frustrated. Pupils don't respond to that. And I wouldn't if someone spoke to me that way. So I like to talk them through it first. What myself and Daisy have are really high standards. And we will always trust and respect a student until they break that with us. And then we will pull them in and have that discussion. I think for us, what's key is having those discussions. And just simple things, like if they are talking over you, you just stop. You don't try and raise your voice. And it's been really effective for us. But one of my key things is I like to get to know all my students as well as I can and make sure I have regular conversations with them. Therefore, if something happens, they feel they can come to me and I can talk them through the problem.
That is the one that was going to be mine, is get to know the kids. We, more so the ones that have a bit more background behind them and a bit more of a struggle. We have duty every lunchtime. We will never stand there and just stand. The two of us will wander and we will talk to every student that we pass, mainly in my year group. If I pass a year seven, I will talk at them. If I know they're a more difficult child, I will talk to them. Because I received an email last year saying, thank you for saying hi to so-and-so. You were the first person that contacted them in that day, spoke to them, and it changed their day. And I think if you build relationships, not the I am a teacher, you are a student, and that is the line. If they get to know you a bit more and you can have a bit more relaxed, then you build up the respect, and that they know that if they cross that line, they won't, because they know they will lose that. And I think respect is the biggest thing.
Yeah, I do. And with talking to them, it's not so much the oversharing, things like that. Simply just walking past and said, did you have a nice weekend? And they might share something with you, and then you've got that interest that you can talk to them about.
So if there was one thing about education that you could change in the UK, what would it be?
I would like to have more time. Because I find, as a head of year as well, time is very precious and it gets taken very easily. As Daisy said earlier, we do clubs and fixtures after school. Therefore, a teacher that could go home at 3 and catch up with their work, we don't get that. Sometimes I get home, it's about 7 o'clock. By the time you have dinner and then settle down, you've got hardly any of the evening left. So I would like more time allocated, more free periods in the day.
That was going to be mine, but my second thing would be that not everything is assessed. For example, we have to stick by the book with cricket, hockey. They have to get here. They have to be there. And the kids know they're always being assessed. But actually, like period five today, we're going to go out and play diamond cricket. And that's their best lesson of the week. Obviously, when it comes to theory side, you have to be assessed. It, you know, they need to get their grades. So not that, but from a practical element, a subject, I don't want to have to tick the boxes. I want to go out and
have them enjoy
let them enjoy it. Yeah.
Great. Finally, what does the centenary of women winning the right to vote mean to you?
It means a lot to us as females in this school. and quite strong females, yeah. and we've managed to work our way up with progression and hopefully more so in the future. It means a lot to us. And interestingly, our school did the school report, and two of the boys came to interview me on this topic, and they had to do some research behind it. And it was really interesting because they were like, I can't believe that happened, that this was allowed. And actually, they just couldn't believe how much we've developed. Mm. So I was really pleased with that. And actually, as two strong females, yeah, we really support, and it's great. It's fantastic. The opportunities that we've had in this school is all due to that.
Yeah, and the same to me. We always promote and we've always strived for equality in all forms of sport and in society. So for us, it is a big, big thing that we have celebrated. When we can, we always tie in strong women into any form definitely. Of anything doing.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, and a couple of quick fire questions just to finish off. Name three famous women, dead or alive, you would like to invite to a dinner party.
Well, I know what you're saying straight away.
Beyonce.
Good, great first choice.
Yeah, it would be Beyonce for me. I would then Jessica Ennis Hill.
Oh, she was my second.
Yeah.
We have a joint
podcast. Yeah, I think we might have to.
So, Beyonce, Jess Ennis Hill.
And I bet you choose the same third as me as well.
No, I was
going
to go.
I'm going to go Serena
Williams. Oh, yeah, Serena Williams is my third. Yeah. Very sporty girls, only because they promote strong women, and none of them are size six, skinny model that, you know, haven't done. Okay, Beyonce is more about the celebrity side of it and promoting it. But Jess Ennis Hill is a mum who went away, came back and got a gold medal. Serena competed whilst she was pregnant. And I just think she is just fantastic, Serena-wise, for her body image, for what it does to girls in sport. Because today, as a head of year, I've seen so many eating disorders and it really is horrible to see. Yeah. But that's why we always promote Serena Williams in
our
school.
Definitely, in our assemblies, everything.
Mm. Brilliant.
Yeah, I think I'd have the same.
Yeah.
But I'll add one more to our little party because it's got to be a joint one. I'd like to bring Pink into it as well. Mm. I follow her on Instagram. I used to really like her growing up, went to her concerts, etc. Because she wasn't just about the singing. She used to do acrobatics, everything. Mm. And since then, I follow her on Instagram. And the way she's raising her children is absolutely fantastic. And I just think she's a real role model. Mm. So we're going to have a great party.
No.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much for talking to me. That was so interesting.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Cheep, cheep.
You are listening to Teacher Toolkit. You can find out more about 100 Years, 100 Women on our website, teachertoolkit.co.uk, or follow us on social media using the hashtag TTKit100Women.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.